There was a
resolution pending on the United Nations floor. Our only reference to the question, what's a peacekeeping force for? Who believed it would be solved in a day? No one walked out of that building on the 8th of May. And it turned soon in one out way.
Welcome to iCarly. I'm Sam.
I don't watch that show.
You don't watch it? Ah.
No,
I'm
26.
The intro, man, but I'm Tom, that's Mike, and we're going to interview you with some sports entertainment talk for like 60 minutes, probably.
See, the thing is, and this is like, because I think you're a couple years younger than I am, so maybe you just see different shows differently, but like the Nickelodeon, like I'm a huge Nickelodeon fan, obviously, of like all those old shows, but I think it kind of cuts off at like around the Cousin Skeeter era, maybe. Something, so I think like from that moment on, I think I kind of like everything else, I was too old for it. So,
well, like, I got that way around the Keenan and Kel time, and then iCarly all of a sudden one day was like, hey, it's actually funny for like adults. Yeah, dude. Like, and they get away with so much. Like,
right,
I believe the word peckerhead was used on that show once, which is insane for Nickelodeon. Not nearly as crass as Donkey Lips Woods asking what the balloon machine was in the porta potty, but.
I remember on Sleet Your Shorts, Sponge said, you know what really pisses me off, I think he said that like
yes.
One time, and that was like, I remember like, wow, Sponge cursed, and that was like the most like craziest thing at the time, so.
That show was filthy for Nickelodeon.
Like, yeah, it was. Remember like Bobby Budnick was like reading like some like dirty magazine like and stuff like that, you know, so. It's weird. I just recently downloaded like all the old Sleet Your Shorts too. I think like a while ago, like on the Crazy Max board, I bought them on DVD, but the quality wasn't great. And to be honest with you, like the ones I downloaded, the quality is no better. So, but I think I want to go back and like just rewatch all those old Sleet Your Shorts because there's only like 14, 15 episodes. You know what I mean? There's not like a lot of them anyway. So
yeah, no, I got homebrew DVDs from Crazy Max. They don't work on PS2s, which I'm guessing you don't use a PS2 to.
No, I just use my Blu-ray player. It plays mostly everything. I'm lucky because like the one that I got, it plays like I have like a lot of DVD-Rs and any kind of disc I have, like, you know, even like the ROH discs. I buy ROH discs from ROH, and like sometimes those don't even work out. So
that evil
whatever.
ROH and its impoverishing Shane Hagedorn. I shake my fist at you.
But anyway, I wanted to get you on tonight, I guess, and I want to just the introduction for the show is because I guess there has really been no huge rush to get us on and talk about the UFC show that you went to last week, which is what we'll be talking about tonight. But I guess because we're not going to be doing, like, you know, results, we're not going to be doing match by match like I think we did with, like, the live events that I went to. I'm kind of more interested in finding out, like, you know, the what goes on. You know, okay, I'm sitting on my couch watching that UFC pay-per-view. You were there live, and I'm interested in that perspective. So I think that's what, you know, I think the one main topic should be tonight. So
exactly, like I'm not going to be like, oh, Kuro Cup strategy going into this fight was blah 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 blah, and like try to go all Mike Coughlin on you because I can't do that. What I can do is tell you like that was a boring show. I'll be honest, like on pay-per-view, guys were like falling asleep the whole time.
Yeah, like, I know that you went to it, so, like, a lot of times, like, if you went to the show or something like that and you have, like, that emotional connection to it, you want to tell yourself it was good, but, you know, in the back of your mind, you think, that wasn't that great of a show. Then when that show was over, I thought, man, that's a show, first off, that I'm never even going to think about again, but I just thought that was just a bland show, in my opinion, so.
It was.
Can't win them all.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, like, it was better live, not to use the cliche, but it was like 100 times better live.
Pay-per-view.
Like, even like I don't know if it was the order of how we saw everything or whatever, but it didn't seem like it was that bad of a show until like right after the main event when Krokop's down and everyone's wanting to throw their chairs at Frank Mir for
That's what it was, you know what I mean? Maybe it was just like that left just such a bad taste in your mouth because you have a good point. Like, there's like a lot of times I'll pimp like a match or I'll pimp an event and people will be on a guy and like, I don't know, that wasn't as good as it was said it was. But like a lot of times, like that's unfortunately the case. Like live wrestling and live MMA probably doesn't translate nearly as well on, you know, onto like video. So
exactly, like the Chris Lytle fight, the Chris Lytle Matsura fight, like saw online like people thought it was like a good fight, but it wasn't like anything amazing. Live, that fight was awesome. Like.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they made a star that night out of Chris Lytle. Like, it really sucks that he's really not, like, amazing. Like, he's good, but he's not, like, anything special. Because, like, if this were pro wrestling, they could totally bring him back with, like, not necessarily, like, a top guy, but a mid-to-top guy. And, mm-hmm. like, put them on semi-main event and do awesome business in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, he's actually 36, I believe. So it's not like he's, like, young enough. Yeah, so sadly it's not like he's young enough where he could be like that Clay Guida and just, you know, we'll just throw him out there and have a fun fight and, you know, move on. You know what I mean?
But, exactly. And, like, it sucks that Matt Mitrione really isn't a good fighter. Because, man, he would be a superstar.
I love that fight. That was one of my favorite fights. That was one of my favorite fights of the entire night, to be honest.
Dude, that guy is like, I said it on my Facebook, it's like he's Clay Guida with man boobs. Like, mm-hmm. he just went out there and went nuts and would not stop smiling the whole time.
Yeah.
And that guy's got something to him. I don't necessarily know what it is. Maybe it's the whole smiling, goofy, huge eyes thing, but that guy's got a charisma to him. And yeah, I'm really hoping, though, after this show that I was really hoping there would be more of a Dana White, like, after the Abu Dhabi deal, where he's like, I owe Indianapolis something better than this. And then he brings us, like, Clay Guida and a motivated BJ Penn or a WEC show with something awesome on it. But can't win them all. But, dude, yeah, the live presentation. I wanted to go on about the live presentation of UFC. Because, like, I forget where I said it, but, like, okay, WWE has, like, the huge entrance and the fireworks and the pyro and the big, huge Titantron deal. But I don't think in terms of what they actually get out of it, they can touch UFC. Like,
yeah, I was gonna say UFC has the exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they have
stage and no pyro,
and they use the building's big screen deal.
Yeah,
but what they do get out of what they have, they get every last little drop. Whereas when you go to, you know, a big WWE show, it's just this big impressive thing and you're like in awe the whole time. But it's more like Disney on Ice than it is a sporting event.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to sit there and root and scream for Ariel to, I don't even know the plot of Little Mermaid. I'm not going to pretend to. but no, like everything, like the lighting of the cage in between fights is even amazing. Like, there was one, like, between a couple of the prelims, and they just kind of had, like, a purple spotlight on the octagon, and I just kind of, like, stared at it for a minute, like, that's awesome. And then, the Baba O'Reilly video, that thing is epic. Like,
yeah, I had emailed Tom here, I think I'd wrote it on your Facebook wall or something like that, like, take video of that video, because I know, like, apparently it's, like, really like super secret, like they like really don't want it getting out there.
Well, it's because of the Who finding out about it, and then
because
you can play it live and not like have to pay the Who a lot of money, but like if it goes on like a DVD or if it's on TV,
exactly.
But like, unfortunately. And there are a couple of versions that have leaked on YouTube because I found like three or four while looking for like some sort of video for you to go off of.
Anyway, go ahead.
But no, like, this video, like, it almost breaks, like, every law of, like, traditional modern video editing. Like, there's a shot where, I forget what part of the song it is. It's, like, right before the big crescendo, and it's the Matt Hughes running, like, power slam deal. And the shot, it's just, like, a still shot for, like, 6 or 7 seconds.
On Frank Trigg?
Yeah, and, like, it breaks every single rule of modern editing, where it's going to be quick cut, quick cut, quick cut.
Yeah.
But it builds up so well that once he lands it, and it lands right on beat, you jump out of your seat and go, oh, that was awesome. I am ready to see men punch each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the one thing I noticed is, like, if it wasn't any more obvious than it is just through everything else they've done, the UFC really wants John Jones to be a huge star. He is all over the video. Like, they show his entrance, they show him, like, beating the crap out of Stephen Bonner 7 or 8 times, they show him celebrating. You know, he's all over that video, so, yeah. He's their new golden boy, to say the least. So, yeah, that video is awesome. Trying to think, because I don't really have, like, notes in front of me. I'm not going to go through, like, match by match.
Yeah, whatever. Just it's casual conversation. Whatever you can think.
Like, I wanted to cry during that Melvin Gillard fight. Because, like, the whole time I was hyping to myself, like, man, you know, because going in, I wasn't, like, I was epically excited to go to UFC, but I knew it wasn't, like, mega supercard, but, like, trying to hype myself up for it. I was like, well, Melvin Gillard's going to go in there and swing after Jeremy Stephens' face for 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he pulled a, not necessarily an Anderson Silva, but he danced around for a good 15 minutes, and that sucked. I was very disappointed because we had a situation where I got off of work, but the old lady friend over there was, she had just started at the place that I work, and she couldn't get off work until like 6:30-ish, and it's like an hour and 15 minutes up there. So we ended up missing like the first couple of prelims, and I wanted to see Mark Hunt so bad, just because rarely do you get to see a guy with that type of magnitude. Not saying he's like a mega star, but he's something, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, that kind of broke my heart a little bit. But no, then like we walk in, and first off, like the panhandlers in Indianapolis are ridiculous. This is skipping a little bit ahead, but after the fights, there's this dude outside of Canseco with like seven giant buckets, like a giant horn in his mouth, and like some sort of washboard gimmick. And it was like a one man band on the sidewalk at like 1:30 in the morning in Indianapolis. And it was pretty amazing. Like, if we weren't completely poor, I might have thrown my debit card at him. But
was Reggie Miller there?
Unfortunately not. I would have been like, hey, Reggie, you're one of five basketball players whose name I know.
Yeah, right.
Dude, I've never seen – I'm speaking of the crowd, like Meltzer said it was like the most guys he had ever seen at like a UFC show before.
Yeah, that's what it – I guess it was a major sausage party, huh?
Yeah, it was. Like, I believe – my girlfriend and my friend Chris's wife, Dominique, were the only two females in the entire building.
Wow.
Like, I there were a couple of girls up above us that wanted to blow Joe Rogan. Like, every time he would get in the octagon, they'd yell, Joe Rogan, please talk.
Wow.
Yeah, it was rather disturbing.
Joe Rogan.
It was Joe Rogan. And he was wearing a very gay sweater, as once again, the lady over there put it. He had like all the chest hair hanging out, and he was looking like he was about ready to go clubbing with Mike Goldberg, which awesome live note. Like, you know that part like between like the live open stand up where they're both standing, like the two shot, they're like, blah blah blah, tonight's main event's going to be awesome, and then they pitch to, you know, Mike Goldberg doing the voiceover for the rules.
Also on the card tonight.
Exactly. Like, yeah. They have, like, a minute in between that just so they can get from, like, 6 inches from where they're supposed to be and then sit down. And they had so much time, apparently, on this show that Mike Goldberg had the chance to take off his jacket and start dancing to the horrible music they were playing in the building. He was doing, like, the sultry stripper dance, and Rogan was trying not to crack up, and that was pretty amazing. What else? CV Dolloway, talk about an awesome submission that will be stolen by every independent professional wrestler in the next 3 months.
Yeah, right?
Like seriously, like, why did Jimmy Jacobs steal that? Like, oh, that's because he was at Dragon Gate while it was going on. So probably this coming weekend at an indie show that Jimmy Jacobs works, he'll steal that for his finish. I'm trying to think of other awesome things about, like, just, I don't, like, UFC, it just felt fresh. Whereas, like, if you go to a wrestling show these days, like, you kind of walk out like, eh, that was 3 hours of my time that I spent in there. And I mean, I had fun, but whatever. Whereas, you know, UFC, like, even like walking out, every single person seemed to be either completely dejected that Frank Mir hugged it out, so to speak, or they're like, whoa, that was cool. That was UFC. And I will say I've been to, even during like the big wrestling boom, I went to a few WWE shows. Like person, I've never seen so many people wearing the shirt of, not necessarily the event, but like UFC shirts in general. Like not even tap out shirts. Like there were like a bajillion like,
A shirt that just says UFC on it.
Yeah, right? Or like a Frank Mir non-affliction shirt or non-tap out shirt. But, like, it seemed like everyone except for, like, 10 or 12 people that were wearing, like, some sort of MMA shirt. So, I don't know. It was something.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, was everyone wearing – I don't own any Affliction shirts. I will never own an Affliction shirt. So, it's – I mean, but, hey, if, like, people wear them, whatever, I just think it's
– No, it's not
just over
whatever.
It's just over redundant.
I'm sorry. I mean,
it's just redundant, yeah.
But, no, it was,
or, like – Not to interrupt you, what about those shirts that Dragon Gate's selling too? Did you ever see those with like the designs all over it and stuff like that? Like, I don't know. I just don't see how people could wear those shirts.
Like, yeah, there were a ton of those. There were these dudes like scattered throughout the crowd with these awesome Krokop team shirts on that mm-hmm. once again, the lady friend and I both want to get because they did not say Team Krokop. They said Krokop team, which is just adorable. It's so cute. And yeah, like Meltzer pointed out, there were like a bunch of dudes with Croatian flags. So either Krukop like was drawing people from his home country or yeah, he's built some sort of Croatian pride amongst Anglo-Americans. Yeah, it was something. Trying to think of other live crap to talk about. Like, yeah, the big wake-up call to me in terms of waking me up to, oh, this is a UFC event with a bunch of dudes here. Was there was a prelim. It was, I think, the one right before they went live on Spike. Couldn't tell you the names.
Tiago Tavares. I have the card pulled up because I have a couple questions.
Okay, it wasn't Tiago Tavares fight because I loved that fight.
Steve Lopez versus Waylon Lowe.
Yeah, that fight. The one that
was a split decision.
Yeah, a split decision with a split on Lopez's face. And the crowd was like, kind of whatever. And they show a close-up of Lopez's face dripping with blood. And it was like The Rock, the president, and Bruce Willis all walked into the building in the same entrance. It was an incredible reaction to blood. And I look around and I think I even said it out loud and I go, this is America where men bleeding all over the place will get gigantic reactions. It almost felt like being at like a gladiator pit, you know, where people were crying. Like people were going to be very upset if this man had to stop fighting because he couldn't see because of this massive amount of blood coming out of his face. It's some sort of massive party. And according to this IM I just got from the lovely lady sitting like 2.5 feet away from me, apparently they were selling Croatian flags at the merchandise table, and I feel like an idiot now. So
yeah, that makes a lot more sense than just people from Indiana just have Croatia flags
laying around. That makes a lot more sense, but you never know, you know. But
interesting.
Yeah, these people were, and they were really quick to boo, like Meltzer said. Like,
yeah, they were.
Like, I was expecting it because you know, like when I go to bars or B-dubs or Hooters around here to watch UFC pay-per-views, people are very quick to boo when fights go to the ground. Except for John Fitch, for some reason, I got a story.
People boo in the restaurant. They're booing.
Yeah.
Dude. Where the fighters are not going to hear them, obviously.
Yeah. Well, like. Well, I went to – quick sidebar. UFC 100, I went with some dudes that I knew in Evansville in my lovely year living down in Evansville. And there's these couple of dudes that ended up being juggalos that I did not know about till later. But we went and saw – it was the Brock – I think it was – yeah, Brock and Mirror, their second fight. And when Brock came on screen – you would have thought people would have gotten into like this massive street fight in the middle of the bar over how much they all hated Brock. Like, I hate Brock more. No, I hate Brock more. So like, yeah, these people exist who react like that in bars, yeah. 1,000 miles away from the building.
And that's why I don't go to bars anymore to watch UFC events. Lesnar versus Couture.
Yeah, I go to like beat up type places or Hooters.
Yeah, I went to the Fox and Hound, which is like it's like a chain. It's like a place where there's just, you know, a bunch of teeth, like a sports bar. And I went there for the Lesnar Couture fight, which was an awesome show, but it was completely ruined because everybody there was just such assholes. Like, it was just so annoying that I just said, I'm not even gonna bother going out for these shows, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's this whole Guido meathead mentality, you know. Like,
especially living in Philadelphia. I mean, you could imagine.
I imagine that'd be terrible because it's awful in like the middle of Indiana. Let alone, I'm sure, out in Philly where every big dude must think he's a fighter. Because that's exactly how it is out here. Every dude over 6 foot and 250 is walking around their tap-out shirt thinking...
Oh, yeah. Everybody's a Tommy Tough guy, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I love that term, and I will be stealing it now for my own real-life usage. And I don't know if there's a whole lot... I mean, yeah, the Frank Mir deal killed that crowd. Because they were, like, way up for Krokop, way more than you think they'd be, just because... Frank Mirko Krokop, not the most enticing main event. But man, Krokop was a loved fellow in that building. And Frank Mir's brother hated it. And Frank Mir is like a heel to the T. Like, that I didn't, I wouldn't have noticed it if she had not pointed it out to me. But once again, the girlfriend over here, Alex, say hi, Alex. She noted to me that Frank Mir was the only guy the entire night that did not slap hands with the fans. Even yeah. Matt Serra did. But it's Frank Mir, no, he's a heel to the core. So that was, I don't know, I'm just stammering and stuttering over myself. Like, I should probably have the card out in front of me, but I don't, because I'm not the smartest boy.
I was going to say, I haven't pulled up, so I just have a couple questions, I guess, to ask you. My first question is, apparently Julio Paulino came out to Miley Cyrus. Is this correct?
I was not there before. That was one of the fights that was before I got there. But I was told as soon as I sat down by my friend Chris's wife, she's like, he tugs on my shirt and she's like, hey, this dude came out to Miley Cyrus and it was awesome.
Yeah, because the reason I wanted to ask was there's a very strange, and it's very odd, but for some reason, like, a fighter coming out to Miley Cyrus is, like, something that can, like, really work. I don't know why. I think just because it's so just two opposite ends of the spectrum that, like, I think it just, like, it's so goofy enough that, like, I like stuff like that. I don't know why.
Well, like, Akiyama has the whole, what's that opera song he comes out to, that Bocelli song?
Oh, yeah, it's Andrea Bocelli. It's, yeah. Sarah Brightman, Time to Say Goodbye.
Yeah.
Andrea Bocelli does that song, yeah.
Yeah, like, he comes out to that, and that's, like, one of the most memorable entrances.
Yeah, you know, oh, it's great, yeah.
In terms of other... Oh, go ahead.
And then I was going to ask you, too, like, what's, like... Because they're always playing, like, music in between. You could kind of hear it when you're watching the pay-per-view, but, like, what's it like when you're there in the crowd? Like, you know, DJ ran on the turntable.
Thank you for bringing this up. Thank you for bringing this up, because I almost forgot. Whoever makes, like, these... They make, like, party mixes for in-between fights, and it's, like, the most bizarre mix of songs. Like... You'll go from, like, Metallica to Drake to AC/DC to MC Hammer to, you know, whatever hot reggaeton. Yeah, Lady Gaga apparently was played, and I forgot about that. Like, yeah, and it, like, whoever's doing it knows how to play as a DJ hero, apparently, because it's all seamless. And but it's whatever D-baggy... rock music you can think of mixed with, like, all this random hip-hop and dance party music. Because, it's... If it wasn't for... And, like, they only leave in, like, the choruses, so you can't get sick of the songs. So... Mm. And...
That's awesome, though. Because you could always hear, like, the songs in the background, you know what I mean? So it's funny to hear what it was, you know, being there live.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, actually, like, how much crap they can shove into, like, a two-minute bit of music in between fights. And speaking of music, Matt Serra is my hero for coming out in Indianapolis for a fight against Chris Lytle, Indianapolis' homeboy, to the Rocky song.
Yeah.
Like, the booze raining in over that song is just so surreal. It's... I wanted to kiss that man. Also, I should have. I honestly should have. Yeah. And by the way, I was going to my friends Chris and Dominique, who I brought up earlier. They did the weigh-ins, and they went to go search for Dana's Twitter stuff. And they have a picture that, if they put it online, I will try to show people online just for Frank Mir's expression, because they went to an autograph signing that Frank Mir did after the weigh-ins. This man looked like he wanted a steak. He had apparently cut more than what he said he was. He looked like he did not want to be there. Because, you know, my friend Chris, nicest guy in the world, legally might be the nicest man in the world. If they had a nice man competition, he would probably win. You know, Dominique's a very sweet girl, too. And she was telling us afterwards, she has this thing where she likes to, like, grab people's biceps when she takes pictures with them. And, like, she tried to do it with Frank Mir, and he kind of, like, stared at her, and then she backed off.
Mm-hmm.
And
some people don't like that.
Yeah, Frank was a very mean, angry, growly fellow.
Yeah, you can. I wonder, like, if just being, you know, going from, like, I have never been to Indianapolis, so maybe I'm wrong in my theory of it. But, like, you know, I guess you go from, like, the big Las Vegas to, like, Indianapolis, which seems like more like a, you know, a regular city. I mean, you know, maybe that just weren't
there, a move. There's a mall and some homeless people.
How is Indianapolis? Is it like, you know, is it like the middle? Is it like how it's portrayed on TV, or what's it like?
It's pretty much exactly how it is. It's like a less Chicago-y Chicago.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been to New York. I haven't been to a lot of these big cities. I've been to Chicago. I've been to Indianapolis downtown. And the closest I can compare it to is like a less busy, less Chicago-y Chicago, you know? Mm-hmm. That's, and I'm not saying it's not cool, people that are listening in the background. Sorry, I'm getting IMs, constant feedback on this show.
By the way, since we brought the middle, and I think we're kind of be wrapping up the UFC talk anyway, how awesome was How I Met Your Mother on Monday night? Because I think we need to talk about this on this show here, because in addition to wrestling, dude, we will tell you, like, good shows on TV to watch as well. I'm like, I'll be honest with you, and I'll let you talk to me. I thought How I Met Your Mother, like, last season fell off a fucking cliff. Like, I just did not like it at all. I just was like, this show sucks. And, like, I just completely soured on it. And then last week's episode I thought was all right, which was the season finale. And then this past week, the one with Ben Vereen and Wayne Brady and Neil Patrick Harris just completely just – I mean, he deserves to win the Emmy just for this show alone. He was so awesome.
They better submit this as his episode for, like, Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, my God, yeah.
There was the moment at the doorstep when Wayne Brady is all like, hey, you're my dad. And they hug and they embrace.
And it's like – that moment could have brought a tear to a glass eye.
Exactly. But I was, like, almost worried that Barney, like, no-selling it and jumping in and be like, hey, dad, would, like, have ruined it. But MPH played it so perfectly that it brought it all the way back around.
He made it work, yeah.
And
great episode.
It was awesome. You know what other show is awesome that, like, I think nobody is talking about and will probably get canceled at the end of the season, which is very unfortunate?
What's
have
that?
Have you seen Running Wild?
Well, no, and I'll tell you why I haven't. Actually, two reasons why I haven't. And I've been DVRing it, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait for a couple episodes to come on, and then, like, I'm going to just spend, like, one Saturday just, like, watching, like, 3-4 in a row just to kind of, like, you know, get a good, like, reach of the program that way. I'm not going to watch it week by week. But obviously reason number two is I don't want to get addicted to the show then find out Fox is going to cancel it, you know.
So. Which is what I'm scared to death of because, like, I didn't watch the first episode the night it aired. I waited, like, 3 or 4 days and watched it online. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to take a wait and see approach, because, you know, it's kind of sort of the group that did Arrested Development, but not really. And I heard it was a little too Arrested Development meant E, but it wasn't enough. And I was kind of skeptical. Then I watched it. I loved it. Like,
tell me about it. Yeah, without like spoiling too much, you know, because I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, tell me about it. Like, what's it like?
It's how to describe it. It is kind of Arrested Development in a way, because
I know it's narrated by like a 13-year-old, right?
The 13 like, I don't think she's even 13. I think she's like 9 or 10. Or she's a very young looking 13.
Okay, yeah, whatever she is.
But it's kind of Arrested Development in that it's you have one of the main characters happens to be a very rich, filthy rich guy who has no conscience whatsoever, and he's slowly converting, you know, these tree huggers into his lifestyle of being just a total piece of garbage, but they're also pulling him back, and it's a nice little. Kerry Russell, I will say, is not developed into the comic beat of these type of shows yet, but she will. She's getting there. Second episode was a lot better than the first. Yeah, it's. I mean, I enjoyed a lot. I never like episodes until like the end of the first season. Usually,
yeah.
Like, I still haven't come back on Parks and Rec, and I should.
Oh, I love it. I don't know why. Like, I thought season two of Parks and Rec was really funny, and I thought it really turned it around. I thought Ron Swanson just became a great character. I don't like Aziz Ansari. I don't know. I just can't get into him for whatever reason. I think he's. I don't like that kind of humor because I think he forces himself to be like goofy and wacky, and I don't like him. But I think he's really funny though, and Chris Pratt was really funny, and I don't know. I think that show works, but. You know, what did you see? But a buddy of mine at work was telling me that Raising Hope is pretty good, too.
See, I almost don't want to give that show a chance because it seems too gimmicky to me.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like it could be good, but there's the whole gimmick, oh, hey, here's a slacker, and all of a sudden he has a baby. What's he going to do? Uh-oh. Yeah. I'm not too, like, into that. You know what it's other like shows... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like it's a skit or something like that where it's like, oh, the woman's in jail or something like that. Here's, I have a baby to watch all by myself. It's like a, you know, a Mad TV recurring skit. But anyway.
Well, it's like I read some online somewhere someone described that shit my dad says show as like an idea that some fake network on a sitcom would have and they'd play a soundbite of to sound, you know, funny and making fun of bad sitcoms.
Yeah, yeah.
That Raising Hope sounds like one of those. But you know what other shows had like an amazing turnaround this season? 30 Rock.
Really? And that's another show I've been DVRing and I'm going to watch, you know, after a couple. It's like, been good, though.
I love the first season, second season's really awesome, third season, fourth season entertained me just enough to keep watching.
Yeah, I thought fourth season was good last year was good, so.
But this might be, so far, like, the best 1-2 shot of episodes they've done yet. Like,
great to hear, yeah. Like, I wish Rachel Dratch would come back on. I don't know, she was always a character, like, I don't know, I really wish, like, they kind of kicked her off before she really got, you know.
Like, I liked the gimmick they had going. I'm not such a huge Rachel Dratch fan. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not a lesbian. I know. I just completely...
Am I a lesbian?
Yes, you are a lesbian, Mike.
You added me. But anyway.
But no, it's turned around. Like, there is a subplot, which I will not spoil for you, involving Tracy Jordan on this past episode that might be the most ridiculous, yet, like, not... Like, it's so over the top that it comes all the way back around to being subtle. Amazing thing they've done with that character yet.
Yeah.
Like, it will blow your mind when it happens because you do not see it coming, yet you almost should see it coming. But no.
I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I'll watch him this weekend, as a matter of fact.
You totally should. And the Kenneth thing is shockingly great, too. I thought I was going to hate that whole subplot, and it's been awesome, too.
Yeah.
But, you know what? Let's talk about more wrestling because, you know.
Absolutely.
We got 25 more minutes or so. I figure we should fill it up with something.
Yeah, I don't know how we... I think we kind of got off this because I said the middle and I think I wanted to talk about TV. But hey, it's fun to talk about something different. But anyway, yes, let's talk about wrestling. And then more specifically, I guess we'll talk about, stuff that you've been watching. So go ahead.
Yeah, dude. Like, I've had a lot of time on my hands lately because, you know, the person I live with and cohabitate with and love more than anything in the entire world has been working 40 hours a week. Training at her new job, which I'm very proud of her for. I want to say that publicly. And she doesn't even crack a smile while I'm saying this. But no, so I decided to download something that I didn't even notice was online. And I'm totally going to get arrested for if, you know, anyone with half a clue gives half a crap. The full 1998 season of WWF Shotgun Saturday Night, which is this weird, like, microcosm of, you know, the Russo era of bing, bang, boof, everything's got to be happening all the time. Yet, it's still a syndicated wrestling show that they did not put any focus on whatsoever. Like, you'll have stuff on the show, like a Taka Michinoku match with Los Barriquas, like one of the Los Barriquas dudes, where they book this really super complicated finish with like 84 dudes running in and whatever, and then Taka sneaks in and gets the win and runs through the crowd. On a 3-minute match that didn't mean a thing on the C show. Or you'll get like Owen Hart wrestled Los Barriquas, it was Zeus Castillo on one of the episodes. And they did like a big switcheroo deal and then they did something and something else and then Owen gets a sharpshooter. And then that somehow led to Savio Vega replacing Shawn Michaels at the pay-per-view the next night. A crap that you would like, that I don't think they would necessarily do that on NXT these days, for instance.
Always liked Shotgun. I always thought it was a fun little show. I mean, it was what it was, you know?
I love syndicated wrestling. I love the squash match format, where you see random dudes. You get to see dudes do offense and never get to do offense. I did not know that they let Jose from Los Barriquas, I can't even remember his last name. I didn't even know they let him do moves. And he got to. Like, there was a ton
Jose
of...
Jose Estrada.
Yeah, Jose Estrada, thank you. Yeah, they let him do so many moves. Like, there are so many Los Barriquas matches in, like, the past 2.5 months that I've watched. I still have, like, 9.5 months left to watch. I think that math adds up somehow. Like, there's so much of those guys in these shows. It's ridiculous. And my eyes have been opened to a talented 7-foot, no-neck monster named Kurgan, who, you know, the world has thought has sucked. And I agree. I, at one point, also thought he sucked. But man, I love him now. He might be like my favorite giant ever. I'll tell you why. Because he knew his role. And not only did he know his role, he like knew it and then improved upon it. Yeah, he shut his mouth. But you imagine, there's a lot of, like, The Rock worked that show a lot. Like, something you would never see is, like, them building up pay-per-view matches on the syndicated shows. Like, a lot. Like, there'd be, like, tag matches with, like, the upper, like, semi-main event guys on these shows. And, like, and they also, something that I thought they stopped doing, like, around 98 or so, there's, like, a ton of localized promos on these. Like they'll go to the slam jam with Doc Hendricks, and he'll be like, "Hey, what's happening, guys? I'm Michael Hayes, and I'm fat, and I'm doing coke, and here's what's happening at Philadelphia Civic Center this weekend." And you know, and then you'll get like random Steve Austin studio promos, like, "Hey, yeah. Hunter, I'm gonna come stunner you, bam!" And they'll have like effects, and they like they'll have like Nation of Domination tape promos where Kama gets to do all the talking. Like out of all those guys.
And then,
like, they ran their own little, like, storylines within, like, these localized promos. Like, there was one, like, right after Mark Henry joined the Nation where, they're doing the whole Farouk-Rocky struggle. Like, who's the leader? Because Rocky's coming in brainwashing everybody. Mm. Where, like, The Rock says, blah, blah, blah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to ask you something that you were talking – I mean, finish your thought, and then I'll
– I was just going to – like The Rock's like, blah, blah, blah. Rock says, Ken Shamrock, I'm going to beat your brains in with a chair, blah, 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 blah. And then Mark Henry's like, yeah, he's going to – and then Farouk says, shut up, you're not in the Nation yet. Like,
I'm actually
– go ahead.
I was going to say, I actually just pulled it up on historywwf.com if you want to even look on there because I'm pulling up right now. When you say Kurgan, are you talking about the Kurgan – when he was with the Truth Commission, or Kurgan when he was with the Oddities?
See, this was a weird in-between Kurgan, because if you remember, they did a deal for a while where, like, he did not, like, wear the Truth Commission garb. He wore, like, long black trunks.
Yeah, he wore long black trunks, and he ripped, like, the Penn State helmet or something like that, right?
Yeah, and he
something like that happened. Yeah,
it was, like, he had the Truth Commission that always lost, and then you had Jackal's monster, Kurgan, that, you know, always beat crap out of everybody. And like I was wanting to put him over for was for a guy that everyone thought was a stiff, he moved really fast and he moved really well. Like there was one match, it was him and of all people Mike Modest of Beyond the Mat fame and of WCW.
Oh my god, I know exactly the match that you're talking about.
Yes, where Jackal comes down from the ceiling on like this whatever they call the podiums that they use at like churches. He comes down from the ceiling on one of those. And as I'm sure I'm getting IM to correction on that right now, he comes down to one of these and he's like, "Hey everybody, I'm the Jackal and I'm promoting, you know," it's called a lectern. Thank you, Alex. A lectern. He came down on a lectern. He's like, "Hey everybody, I'm promoting peace because this violence here in the World Wrestling Federation is terrible." And while he's doing this, Kurgan just randomly decides to start practicing moves because nobody's paying attention. And he whips Modest into one corner and does this, like, weird combination of, like, the flying double knees that, like, all the Dragon Gate guys do now. And, like, that clothesline that the Miz does where, like, his legs go through the ropes. Like, he did, like, two or three of those. And I'm like, dude, you're, like, 7 feet tall. Why are you doing this crap? But he's Kurgan. He wanted to do it. And, you know, man, for a guy that, like, history has forgotten, he was booked so well. Like, dare I say, I think him and Austin could have had a run. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm completely nuts. Thank you, Peanut Gallery. But no, I think he could have had a run, like, with Austin, because he was booked that well where, like, nobody bumped the dude. Where, you know, he didn't, like, ever, like, looking back, people thought he sucked way more than he actually did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not an amazing, you know, he could not have like gone in there and done the 25-30 minute matches that Austin had with guys like Foley and Rocky. But I thought it would have been a lot more interesting than, you know, Austin doing all those three ways with Taker Kane for like 8 months on end.
I always thought Bull Buchanan was my pick for the most underrated Truth Commission member, to be honest with you. When he was, what was he, Recon?
He was Recon.
How do I know this?
Because Luke Pointier was a sniper. Which, yeah, yeah, it's so nerdy of me that I know the guy's name.
I had the Jack. I think I had the action figures. That's why.
I did too. Because I look just alike, I swear.
Yeah.
And I always wanted the Kurgan.
They had berets. Yeah, they had the berets.
Yeah. And I'm looking at this match list. Thanks for pointing it out. And it reminds me of a match I wanted to bring up. It is Mark Henry against the Black Phantom. In 45 seconds, these guys somehow managed to mess up every move they did. Like, every one of them. Like the Black Phantom was, like, this big jacked-up dude under a black mask with, like, black tights that it was probably someone like Paul Roma or someone, like, a name guy who they put out there as, like, kind of doing a tryout and kind of because they wanted someone out there to trust with Mark Henry that, you know, Mark wouldn't kill him.
Mark Henry was still a face at this point, right? This was before the sexual chocolate heel turn, right?
No,
this
it was like, right after. It was right after the Nation, and then he did the sexual chocolate.
Ah, okay, all right.
Yeah, but
history.
But no, like, they go out there, and for some reason, whoever it was under the mask decided it would be really, really a good idea to go out there and do a top rope missile dropkick, like Dynamite Kid style, on Mark Henry. 15 seconds to do a match. And somehow he lands in a such a way where Mark Henry no-sells the dropkick, yeah, gets kicked right in the jaw and pretty much breaks his own face. And this dude falls on the side of his head and knocks himself out. And, like, he gets up, but he's, like, all wobbly. And Mark Henry doesn't have a clue what he's doing out there. And it's not like Ron Simmons is out there, like, cornering him, trying to tell him, hey, do this, do that. He's being cornered by D-Lo and Kama, who probably had no clue what's going on. And so he picks the dude up and gives him an Irish whip. And he starts running the ropes like a drunk guy. And Kevin Kelly's all like, maybe, you know, he's disorientated because, you know, he's so thrilled that he just hit a drop kick on Mark Henry. And then Mark Henry gives him his finisher, the World's Strongest Slam, and he kicks out.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on? And Mark Henry hits an elbow drop again. It was, if it's on YouTube or Daily Motion, dude, you gotta
yeah, I got
it. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
How is Kevin Kelly on these, because I thought, like, on that Glory by Honor 9 pay-per-view, I thought he killed it. I thought he was really good.
Like, his 2 or 3 ROH pay-per-view appearances, he's done amazing. Kevin Kelly is my favorite commentator in wrestling right now. He doesn't have, like on WWF TV, you don't have, like, a lot of breathing room like they do on the Ring of Honor pay-per-views, where he can be like, hey, so-and-so, like, Kenny King, he reminds me of Deion Sanders when he used to call Florida State football, you know. He kind of has to stay, you know, kind of close-knit to what they're talking about. Yeah, he'll go off on little tangents, like when Jeff Jarrett's, he'll go off on, like, little NWA-related tangents and such. But, I mean, he's not bad. He carries Michael Cole, who, by the way, there's an episode, I believe it is the 124 episode of this show. Michael Cole gets to debut, like, 12 years ahead of when everyone thought he turned heel. He gets to play heel for an episode of Shotgun Saturday Night.
Wow.
And it is not nearly as good as you think. He's just going out there like, hey, Kevin Kelly, I banged your wife. Like, just blatant crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, he used the banged your wife line like 2 or 3 times.
That's awesome.
Like, it was pretty fantastic. By the way, I saw another match I want to pimp out on here. It's Brian Christopher and Flash Flanagan against Taka Michinoku and Elpo Pantera.
That sounds good.
Like, way better than even you'd think it is, and it looks like a good match. But, like, Flash Flanagan, who's, like, brought up on, you know, Memphis style and going out there and doing arm drags and babyface fire and all this, like, basic crap, going out there and doing, like pitch-perfect lucha with El Pantera. And then the finish is, like, really, really cutesy and, like, not in a, like, a bad way. Where, like, Pantera is apparently his finisher in the WWF was a moonsault. He goes up for the moonsault, his face is to the crowd, and, like, Brian Christopher comes in and, like, clips Taka and puts him in position. And then Flanagan, being the awesome dude that he is, instead of just standing around with his thumb up his butt, you know, he goes over to the other side of Pantera and he's like, please don't moonsault my partner, please, please. And, like, they even pointed out in commentary, because I believe Flanagan wasn't even under a contract, so he wasn't, like, really the focus of the match, but, like, they pointed out that Flanagan's over there, you know, being awesome, and then Pantera moonsaults Taka, and, you know, it was a really cute little match. And trying to, like, remember who else I loved off these. Bradshaw, yeah. Like, might eclipse even Vader as my favorite squasher in the history of the world around this time. Because Bradshaw decided, hey, I just went to All Japan, so I'm going to become, like, Misawa meets Stan Hansen meets the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
He goes out there and he, like, takes off his chaps and he starts whipping dudes with them. And then he starts throwing out tiger suplexes.
Yeah, and this was when he was a lot younger, so he's a lot more mobile than he was, like, you know, in recent years too, right?
I mean, exactly. He was moving around real crazy quick and he was tossing dudes with his heads.
That's interesting. I'd love to go back and watch that now.
And, like, he does this, you know, like those spinal tap kicks or the spina bifida kicks or whatever you call them, you know, where you snap another dude and kick him in the spine. His might be, like, the scariest versions of those I've ever seen. Because he was wearing, like, those big old cowboy boots. And they made, like, this really, 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 really loud thud. Like, even worse than, like, these the low keys and the Samoa Joes in the world. And it was amazing. Speaking of amazing, I just actually watched this match, like, right before I went into work earlier. It was the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, the New Age Outlaws, when they were in their primitive stage against Tom Brandy and Flash Funk. And this match wasn't really very good. But it stood out because when Brandy and Flash Funk, who for some reason got their own entrance, came out, Tom Brandy decided, you know what, they might have just thrown us together, but I'm going to make a team out of this team. So he starts raising the roof and dancing with Flash Funk, and they start, like, gyrating on each other. and you've never seen a more awesome dance couple in your life. But
I was going to ask you, how's the head? Have you watched like any Headbangers matches? Because I was always a Headbangers fan when I was younger. So like, I wonder now that I'm older, you know, how they hold up today.
Unfortunately, no, I have not gotten to see one Headbangers match because I think like the weirdest thing, they were like Raw exclusive guys, like, which is weird because they feuded with the NWA, yet the NWA was all over Shotgun. But like, they would like have like mini feuds with like random job guys like Flash Funk and, you know, like these other like random dudes that didn't amount to crap in the company, like Chains. Chains got like a month long storyline on Shotgun with Jeff Jarrett. For wow. No reason. Like, they just kept doing, like, screw job matches with those two, or, like, they'd run
up. Were Brian Lee and Jeff Jarrett, you know, BFFs or something like that they were doing
I guess. Like, they're both from that same Tennessee area.
So yeah.
Who knows? And then, like, speaking of random storylines, like, at one point, and this had to be a rib on Paulie, because I know, like, all the ECW guys hated Pablo Marquez because he did the Yubas gimmick on the indies, like, mocking Sabu or whatever, and then he got brought into ECW and they beat the crap out of him. But they brought Pablo Marquez on TV as like the like Ecuador's number one contender to the light heavyweight title, and they gave him like his own entrance, and Kevin Kelly talked him up the whole show, and then he comes out with Brian Christopher and like almost beats Taka Michinoku for the light heavyweight title. Just the weirdest crap. Like, they would do that with jobbers sometimes. Like, it's different like era, but like in 2000 on Jacked, I remember for a while they ran a series of matches between Kai and Tai and S.A. Rios with random job guys. And they would, like, dress similar. Like, there was this black dude named, like, Corey something. And they both dressed in, like, all flannel. And all flannel, but a denim.
Corey.
Like,
was he from Corey?
Not Corey Williams from the New South. Not him.
From the New South. All right, that's
not him. Because this dude was, like not fat like that guy was. But
we might be the only two people that even know about the New South.
Dude, Ashley Hudson was the stuff, man. I loved me some Ashley Hudson.
Like, yeah.
And I was so happy when he, like, got his that WCW gig for, like, 3 weeks when he was, like, Daphne's dude in Crow.
Yeah.
Like, man, he looks just like me. You know, I was so excited to see him on TV because I would watch Worldwide, like, every week and see, like, the New South and the Reinforcers.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. I remember when I was younger and I would watch those shows. They were good.
Yeah, and, like, I would see them on, like, because Burt Prentice's TV was on in, like, my grandma's cable system. So when I would go to my grandma's house, I'd see, like, NWA main event or whatever it was called, USA Championship Wrestling. And I'd see all these dudes, and I'd be like, yay.
You know, I know, like, you know, obviously we live in an era where we're able to get a lot more of these footage. And I'm sure, like, you know, in years to come, we probably will get even more. But, like, it's so weird to think, like, that there are so many WCW, like, TV shows. Like, there's, like, so much footage that's, you know, has not even been released yet. Like, that's you know, out there. That's, like, unbelievable, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, the Power Hours and all that stuff. You know what I mean? I know you could get them on Crazy Max, but could you just imagine to think, like, all, like, the random awesome matches? Like, I don't know, all those shows
just,
and
like,
stuff
TV
like that.
Stuff. Imagine, like, all the random, like, dark matches there are that have in their libraries. Like, all the random guys that have gotten tryouts. Like, isn't there, like, a Benoit Owen Hart dark match from like 1995, like,
yeah, remember that? I remember in PWI they had a picture of it or something like that.
Yeah, like,
man, that's crazy.
Crap like that. And like, isn't there like a Super Dragon WCW dark match out somewhere?
Yeah, isn't that, it's too bad. It's just, but I guess, and this can go on to our last topic before we call it a night here, but like, it'd be nice if they put that on WWEclassics.com or something like that. You know
that
what I mean?
An amazing month, like,
you know, it's too bad. Like, I know they're going to do this network, and you know, I've been dreaming of having like a WWF network since I was, you know, 6 years old. You know what I mean? That's going to be like the coolest thing ever. But like, I think there just needs to be a day where they just have like, you can get any kind of any TV show that you wanted from like, you know, WCW or whatever like that, and just watch it whenever you want to.
Which
maybe someday.
Exactly. Which they're kind of sort of doing on WWEclassics.com. It's .net. Anyway, no, they put a whole bunch of new crap up, and I'm very excited because it's like, because, you know, the whole deal with SmackDown moving to Sci-Fi, they put, like, SmackDown Hidden Gems up or whatever. I watched a couple of things today. Like, let's see, what did I watch? I'm looking through the list of crap here that I watched. It's not rememberable. Rememberable, yeah, that's a word. Let's see. I watched the Triple H Taz match from when Taz was ECW champion, and they did that one deal in Philly. Like, I remember it being so much better than it was. It was like finding out Santa was dead. Because I remember that book being amazing. Like, I loved it. Yeah. Like everyone at the time, like, crapped on it. I'm like, no, that match is awesome. But then it was like a bunch of punching and kicking, and it had no heat compared to what I thought it did. Like, I remember this match being, like, very, like the crowd being insane for this match. And then I watched it today, and it broke my heart.
Oh, that's too bad.
And what else? I watched this. There was an 8-pack challenge on here from – it was – okay, people crap on SmackDown having a horrible roster now. Get this. The 8 top guys on that show on July 29, 2004 were the following. John Cena was a name guy. John Cena is a name guy. Booker T, you know, he's a name guy. Rob Van Dam, you know, he's a pretty big name. Then we get to the 4th biggest name in this match, Rene Dupree. Billy Gunn.
Oh, my God.
Kenzo Suzuki. Luther Reigns. And Charlie Haas. The 8 biggest names on the roster at that time.
That's why I wasn't watching SmackDown at that time. I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
No, and like it's
I don't.
It's a
remember
weird,
that at all.
Like they did an 8-way match. Like, imagine how awkward that would have to be putting together. Because like you only have 4 corners to put guys in, so you know you have to carry guys up, and you have guys in the same corner attacking each other, and it's just absurd. But no, there's some gems on here. There's the Angle Lesnar match, which according to David Bixenspan is the worst match of all time. So. I'll go back and watch that sometime this week. They have the Battle Royal Recall on the belt, which I'm looking forward to. And they have random new crap on here. Like they have, you know, Taker and Jericho from last year. They got the awesome Ray Morrison match on here. And then looking up the list stuff I'm going to watch, No Way Out 2004 I will not be watching. Because I have seen the one awesome match on that show like 10 times, so I don't need to watch the rest of it, which was terrible.
What match was that?
Eddie and Brock for the belt.
Oh, okay.
Which is like one of my favorite matches ever, and should.
There's
be
a No Way Out. What's the No Way Out with Angle versus Taker? Because that I think that's
that was the year after. It was a year after, yeah. Because I remember like at the time I was thinking like why isn't that the Mania main event? Because those two hadn't touched for like 9 months, and that could have been a really good WrestleMania main event, and instead they go with Orton and Ray and. An Angle, I think it was. Yeah, it was Orton, Ray, and Angle, and then Taker got Mark Henry, which made no sense, but whatever. It's WWF in 2004. And, though, listen to this, Jim. Apparently, Joey Styles very much hates the Disco Inferno. This is a blurb from the November 11, 1995 WCW Saturday Night. Ready for a shocker? You'll find out an unbelievable revelation in regards to the World Heavyweight Championship. In regards to in-ring action, one WWE superstar will also be in for a surprise when he loses cleanly in what should have been an easy victory. Plus, it's the debut of Disco Inferno's music video. Remember, you can fast-forward the video player.
Wow.
Yes.
Wasn't a Glenn Gilberti fan, apparently.
Yeah, Disco does not like his fellow Paisan.
What's your favorite Disco Inferno match?
Honestly, I like the match he had with Jacqueline that one time. Like,
that's what I was going to say. That was one of my favorites. I think it was at Halloween Havoc, right?
Yeah, it was the year after they were supposed to do it, and he was all like, no, I'm not going to job for a woman. What are you talking about? And what else has he really ever done? Like, he did, like...
I remember he was always awesome when he was on WCW Live. That was about it. When he was,
When Russo went crazy, it was just like, okay, every night we're pretty much going to have the booking meeting on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, they Skype the booking meetings, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Do you remember, like, he would always say that he was going to be, like, all like, these characters, like, when he was on WCW Live?
Oh, he would...
I wish I could go back and listen to all those old shows, because I bet you some of them...
I have, like, 4 months' worth of them around the time that it got really crazy, when, like, Bischoff and Russo came in together, and then Bischoff left, and then they did the deal with Hogan, and they did, like, the whole fake work shoot thing where, like, Hogan sued WCW and Russo called him bald and all this crap. Yeah, that stuff's insane because they were in Jeremy Borash's basement every night booking Nitro and Thunder. And then, like, you hear them in the background, like, hey, what about if we put this guy over this guy? And then, like, every once in a while, Jeremy Borash would butt in, major scoops Monday on Nitro, Kiss Demon to wrestle Lenny Lane.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Yeah, I remember, like, they would have, like, a hot tub party or something like that the one time. I don't know that. WCW Live was a good show for those who remember it, I guess.
It was something. It was if Dave Meltzer is Dan Rather, then Jeremy Borash's WCW Live was very much Howard Stern or Mancow.
Oh yeah.
It was a
fun show, yeah.
It was something. Very much something. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. All the hype for the 92 Rumbles on here, which, I mean, it's one of the best shows of that era. So, I mean, that's worth watching. And then, yeah, I'll get to watch some of this stuff. They got like two random Randy Orton matches from like 2002, which I would think they'd want people to forget.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's good. It's a good lineup this month. And they finally archived the Saturday Night episodes. So if you want to go back and watch Alex Wright use the Lion Tamer as a finisher, which I believe it or not, it happened. There's an episode on here. It's the same episode. They have it labeled clearly. This show is awesome because Eddie Guerrero wrestled Dean Malenko for 20 minutes on it. Like, that's pretty much how it's labeled. I forget what day it was. Like, it was like October something 95. But Alex Wright in the opener has this like really boring like 2 minute match. How you make a 2 minute match boring, I have no idea. But he pulls it off with this dude. Not only does he pull off being boring with this guy, but like this crowd, like the center stage crowd, completely dead, sitting on their hands, whatever. They couldn't stand Alex Wright, and they pipe in all this crowd noise, like ridiculously so loud that you cannot hear the commentary for the match, which is Dusty Rhodes ranting and ramblings, which I could not believe you could pipe in noise that loud. And then Alex Wright, instead of doing the German suplex, he does a Lion Tamer as his finish.
Wow.
Pretty mind blowing.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But yeah, that's about all I have. How about you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, real quick. I think there's a couple, like, if we talked about, you know, the past, if we just want to talk real, like, current indies for a few minutes before we get going. I don't know if you saw the ROH TV tapings were this evening, and I guess announced for Final Battle is El Generico and Kevin Steen. And I don't know about you, but I think they did, like, an excellent job building this pay-per-view up. I mean, not this pay-per-view, this matchup. Because I think it's going to be something like Steen. If he loses, Hester, I think it's loser leaves ROH versus Mask is how I'm seeing the thing here. But it should be great, though.
Where'd you see the spoilers at? Because I want to see this crap real quick.
I think it's on the, and I'm going to publicly admit that I am visited here, but it's on the ROH board on the forum.
All right, we'll look real quick. This is stimulating audio.
Yeah. So while you're saying that, I'll just talk real quick about I guess the other topic I wanted to bring about, and then we'll talk about the ROH while you're looking up the results here, is AR Fox going to evolve. And I know you probably have something to say about this too, but I'm super pumped for the guy. I think it's kind of hard, like, nowadays when people are so sour, people are kind of burnt out on wrestling. If you say a guy's really good and, you know, it's time to watch him, like, people will get, like, oh, you're overhyping him or this or that. Like, when people, you know, for whatever, might just have their standards set too high, but I think, like, in due time, A.R. Fox might be one of the biggest stars on the indies. I mean, at least in Evolve, anyway.
He's going to do nothing but improve, which...
Yeah, and I mean, I think, I don't know, you know, if I had or you had anything to do with it, because we have been talking about it. You don't really see a lot of A.R. Fox talk on message boards or anywhere, really. So, you know, who knows how he got signed, but I'm really happy for the guy. What do you think about that?
I'm very excited. Like, I went out of my way to post on the F4W board yesterday, like, hey, don't expect him to be a complete worker right now, because I don't want people going in like, oh, exactly, this guy's the next so-and-so, and then because of the expectations being so high, he craps up.
If Rey Mysterio retired, I think AR Fox could jump right in and take his place.
Brian Alvarez.
Oh, that was like that.
That's death for that guy. Ricochet, poor guy. He's awesome. I love him. But the second Brian Alvarez said that...
No.
Death to him.
Yeah.
Like, real quick, because we are running kind of late on time. I'm looking at this now. I cannot wait to see this Holiday Gauntlet, just because I love Gauntlet matches and I love the Holidays. And apparently Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole are a team in ROH.
Yeah, that's odd that they're a team. Pacing the bravados, so I guess, you know, just probably gave me like a squash, whatever. Fridays are usually the tapings days when they kind of have like the filler stuff, and then like Saturday to the scene they have like the main events, more of the main events, because they shoot way out of order, if you haven't noticed by watching the TV. Like, they shoot all different, you know, their matches. They kind of just piece them together. There's no rhyme or reason when they're doing these tapings.
That totally comes off like that. Though I kind of want to see the return to prominence of Slick Wagner Brown, which I am very upset that was a dark match.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I was never a Slick Wagner Brown fan, unfortunately.
I bet he's very happy that it is October and not April.
Ah.
That was funny. Yeah, I think
I want to see Eddie Edwards versus Necro. I think that's interesting.
Which, by the way, I'm very disappointed that Necro was to work beyond wrestling. That broke my heart when I saw that. Like, he really needed the money that bad. Like, the weed must be good amongst those nerds. But anyway, I think we're going to head out because, it's been an hour and...
Yeah.
So anything else? Last closing words before we head out for the next week? So
that'd be it. I'll talk to everybody next time.
Later.